Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Zurich, Switzerland, earned a B.S. in electrical engineering from Texas A&M University and an MBA in marketing and information technology from Carnegie Mellon. Since 2016, he's been the president and chairman of the McDonald Agape Foundation and its chairman since 2020. Formed in 1998, the McDonald Agape Foundation encourages distinguished scholars for Christ at 25 elite universities worldwide in areas of theology and where theology intersects with medicine, law, ethics, and the arts. His name, Peter McDonald, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJM. I'm Jack Krasula, this is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Peter McDonald. Since 2020, he's been the chairman of the McDonald Agape Foundation. Peter, welcome to town. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks, Jack, for having me.
Can we start this evening with an opening prayer?
Absolutely. I'm going to use a prayer from a friend of mine who calls it Maggie's Prayer. He learned it from a missionary, and it's very simple. It goes, Lord, let your miracles break forth every day, and let me not be an obstacle in any way. Amen.
Thank you. All right. Let's start by talking about your mom and dad, your childhood. Your mom, Susie, moved the family 20-plus times. You, your brother, and your two sisters, mom and dad. Tell us about your mom.
Well, it was really sweet. My mom was an airline flight attendant, worked for Eastern Airlines, graduated from Ole Miss, and took a job working for Eastern right out of college. She met my dad on kind of a commuting, dating relationship, and they got married and moved to New York. And I was born as the youngest of four children, and mom, dear mother, moved to Zurich, Switzerland when she was 8 months pregnant with me and had four children under five at the time. I was the fourth. And she died, she passed away, or died, whatever term you prefer, 6 months ago. Or a little over 6 months ago, just before Christmas last year. A sweet woman.
You know, your dad, what we're going to talk about next, was bigger than life. Your mom, in a very quiet way, was very strong in a quiet, graceful way. And boy, she would just give him a look sometimes, and Peter, okay, that's all it took. All right, Alonzo McDonald. Your dad.
Yep. Dad was an amazing man. He was a hard man to be a son to. This is probably a little more personal than maybe you had expected. He rose, as I like to say, and he and I chatted. I ended up working for him, which was really a gift and an honor and something I never expected and I actually really didn't want. But it turned out that was a really good idea for both of us. But he climbed the ladders of business, of education, and of government. In government, he was acting White House Chief of Staff under President Carter. In education and university life, he ended up starting Harvard Business School's Executive MBA program. And in government, he was president of a Fortune 50 company and CEO worldwide of McKinsey & Company, which is a global consulting company.
That's the creme de la creme of consulting.
Yeah. No,
and Dad was managing partner worldwide.
Worldwide. There's a really funny story you may not have heard. I know you've interviewed my dad a couple times when he was alive. And we were living in Paris at the time. I was born in Switzerland, and then we moved to Paris afterwards. And I was seven. And Dad come home from a business trip, and Mom said, well, Al, how was the trip? And he says, I think it's a good trip. They just voted me chairman of the firm. We're moving to New York. And that's kind of the notice we had that we were moving from Paris to New York. But yeah, he is a credible man. Cared about the mind a lot. Voracious, as you know, right? Voracious reader. And just really interesting person, became, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but became deeply religious in his mid-50s. And we can talk about that more, but yeah.
Great. A mutual friend, Mark Maurice, said about your dad, to paraphrase D.L. Moody, L. McDonald spent 50 years thinking he was somebody, 10 years learning he was nobody, and 30 years discovering what God can do with a nobody.
Yeah, he really, I talked about those ladders. The analogy on the ladders of education, university, and business is he climbed high enough up those ladders to be able to see over the walls of what each of them was leaning against. And he didn't like what he saw on the other side. And he was working for Carter at the time. He was in his mid-50s. He was in charge of the White House and from a staff perspective. And he started asking questions about God. And so that's how he became particularly religious and deeply religious. You probably know he became a strong Christian then, and then at the age of 78, accepted full communion in the Catholic Church, which was a surprise to all of us. We all got a memo as children. And
yes.
Yes.
Yes, a white paper.
A white paper, exactly.
I had the honor of golfing with him every Sunday from April through October for maybe 12, 14 years. And I would just bring questions, and then we would have a little lunch and questions. Unbelievable. He told me once, Jack, Jesus is the most influential person who ever lived. He wrote nothing. He owned nothing. He asked for little and gave wholly of himself. And he selected 12 misfits and took them on a 3-year camping trip.
You know, Al was a student of life, and I called him Daddy Mac. We called him Daddy Mac. I actually had three different names, and Mr. McDonald in some environments, Al in some, and Daddy Mac. But he was a student of life. And through the questions of purpose, he really studied what is life's purpose. He had lived all over the world, and he became convinced, and I believe rightly so, that number one, Jesus Christ as a person was the most influential person in human history. And so ask the question, why? And through that became deeply religious and became a deep Christian. And in the end, because of his love of organizations and infrastructure, he says, how can an organization survive for 2,000 years without the hand of God? And that's part of the reason he became full communion in the Catholic Church.
He used to say, Jack, I'm an open-minded novice. So we're talking to Peter McDonald. We've been talking about his dad, who also said, life is like a roller coaster. The winners are the ones who keep climbing on the broken rungs of the ladder of life. And I'm Jack Rasulin, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasulin with Peter McDonald. Peter, you mentioned that Dad was chief of staff for President Jimmy Carter. When you were 12, I think for the first time, you went to a place called Camp David.
Yeah, that was really, it was incredible as a 12-year-old. We did go to Camp David. We did not take the helicopter there, but once the helicopter left, one of our really fun memories is the Marines helped me with my skeet shooting. And it just, you know, Camp David is where presidents go to get away. It's in Maryland. It's a helicopter ride away from the White House. And just some tremendous experiences. We were talking about my dad a little earlier. He had a very fun expression. You mentioned a couple. One of his was, perfection will be tolerated, which is kind of an interesting, which is an interesting expression.
That's the way he lived.
That's the way he lived, right? You know, and so.
The man would read 1,000 pages every week.
Probably. And when he was
85, 87 years old.
Yeah. So he died at the age of 91. And kind of the last couple of years, I was conscious to feed him good books to keep his mind alive. His body was, he was having to surrender more of his body. And that's what we all have to do, is we have to surrender our bodies in the end. But I wanted to help keep his mind alive. And so I was always feeding him good books to read.
Okay. Talking about surrendering your body, you got an electrical engineering BS from a place called Texas A&M University. These Aggies have tremendous pride. In Texas, it's you against the other 30 million people in Texas. Why this phenomenal pride if you're an Aggie?
Oh, that's a great question. No one's really asked me that question before. Texas A&M is a unique place. It's in College Station, Texas. If you don't know, it's really in the middle of nowhere. It's an hour and a half. If you take a triangle with Dallas on the north, Houston on the southeast, and San Antonio at the southwest, it's right in the middle of those. There's really nothing around. It's called the Twin Cities. I thought the Twin Cities was Minneapolis-St. Paul, but apparently it's Bryan-College Station. But there is a real rich tradition and rich history, and they understand history. And they teach history, and they narrate history, and they live history. And that brings a beautiful pride in about what it is. Now, small towns have their expressions and have their kind of things, you know, nuances to them. There's an expression in College Station which says Highway 6 goes both ways, and Highway 6 is the road that goes through.
And that's an Aggie talk.
That's an Aggie talk.
That's a math major.
Yeah, and it's the polite way of saying if you don't like it, you can leave, right? You know, but there's just a rich history. It is one of the largest non-military academy cadet schools in the country, and that's a big part of its history as well.
Everybody else plays football with 11 people. The Aggies play with 12.
That's right, yeah.
Why?
The 12th man came, so this is a great history lesson. So there was a 12th man came about when Texas A&M was playing a football game, and their team players were getting hurt, and their bench was thinning out. And in the midst of the game, they asked one of the players, and I don't remember his name, but they asked one of the players who used to be on the team but had moved to the basketball team to suit up and to be ready for the game. And so that's where the story of the 12th man comes from. At the end of the game, he was the only guy left on the bench. All the students stand for the whole game. We as Aggies stand for the whole game in representation that we are ready and willing at a moment's notice to come down and be part of the team.
All right, we're talking to Peter McDonald. If you want to learn more, www.mcdonaldagape.org. Peter, from 98 to 2015, you toiled and thrived in the technology field and the cybersecurity world. Talk about that 17-year chapter of your life.
You bet. I started on the engineering side and moved across the spectrum from engineering and development, writing code, designing hardware computer systems, to support engineer working with customers and using our products, to then marketing products and then selling products themselves. So it fit a spectrum across that, and also fit another spectrum if you're a three-dimensional person. Another spectrum is technology area, from pure hardware to pure software and service providers. I'll stick with the cybersecurity because it's just a whole world of itself. And I'll use a fun analogy a little bit. When you build a house, you've got the framers, the electricians, the plumbers, right, the painters, all that. In the cybersecurity world, if you think of the opposition, you've got those kind of teams as well. And they're available per trade or they're available per time. So if you want people to infiltrate your network, There are infiltration teams that exist. If you want people to scour your network and find what kind of information and systems you have, once they're in, they're those. They're exfiltration experts. They're denial of service, people that can create distractions while something else is going on. And on the open market, they're all available at a cost, at a time, at a commission rate. And it's very organized. And what's of interest is information that can be transferable to some kind of asset, whether it's health information so that they can get prescriptions for other people or even surgeries in somebody else's name, or whether it's financial information that they extract for just pure financial gain. Fascinating business.
All right. You were in the technology field through the dot-com boom.
Yeah, I was.
Talk about those glory days.
Yeah, absolutely. So I worked for a startup company. I was employee number 49, because I remember that because it was less than 50. And we had two customers, Netscape and Documentum. This is old days. This was an e-learning company. And I had lived overseas. I speak three languages. And I was part of the sales team on the technical side that helped develop the first four or five customers in the U.S. My boss comes in to see me one day, and he says, the Europeans need help selling. And I said, Stuart, what do you need? He goes, I need you to go to Europe and sell. And I said, do you need me back? He goes, or do I stay there? He goes, no, I need you back. I said, how much time do I have? He says, 9 months. And so right in the midst of that dot-com, I went home that day. I booked a flight to Germany because I knew I wanted to be on the continent, not necessarily in the UK. We had teams in both places, and I ran a sales team in Europe, and it was wild. Now, the market valuations were overvalued, and they came back down in the end. And we're seeing some of that even this week with market valuations in tech, and they're coming back down. But
all right, in 1991, your dad teamed with Oz Guinness.
Yeah.
Another phenomenal human being. And they started the Trinity Forum, which continues 30 plus years later. Please.
To this day, yeah. I've got two Trinity Forum readings in front of me. So the Trinity Forum is an organization. It's a nonprofit. And he started it with Oz because, as I mentioned, Al was really interested in the mind and how we think about things is so important. I'll be a little religious. If you take Romans 12:1 and 12:2, in the New Testament, in Romans, it talks about to submit your bodies as living sacrifices. And the first body part that it talks in Romans 12:2 is the transformation of the mind. And really how to then, I'm going to translate or expand a little bit, how to think well. And so Al really wanted to understand and to think well. And he had an incredible network as being CEO of McKinsey & Company of these leaders. And he realized one of his things he could do is help bring questions of ethics and beauty and wonder into this narrative. And let me just give a quick little example. He loved the story of Les Misérables, Victor Hugo's story of Les Misérables.
Jean Valjean.
Jean Valjean, right, exactly. And, there are a couple key characters within
I dreamed a dream. In days gone by.
Exactly, right? And so you have Inspector Javert, who never believes that someone can be transformed and is looking for this prisoner, Jean Valjean, his whole life, who stole a bread to feed his family. But Jean Valjean becomes a changed man, and he becomes a changed man through a bishop that catches him red-handed after stealing candlesticks. But the bishop says, why did you leave without the silver? And so the bishop's name is Monseigneur Bienvenu, which means welcome, essentially, right? It's good to see you. So the Trinity Forum exists. I've got two of them in front of me. One is The Loss of the University, and the other is The Wager by Blaise Pascal. Mm. And great readings if you're interested in questions of life, of purpose, of ethics.
And they've condensed the books into like 40 pages.
They have. They're about, they're a good 90-minute flight yes. Read. Absolutely.
www.thetrinityforum.org.
Yep.
Cry, my beloved country. Unbelievable. How much land does a man need? Who Stands Fast by Dietrich Bonhoeffer. We're talking to Peter McDonald, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Peter McDonald. Since 2020, he's been the chairman of something called the McDonald Agape Foundation. What does agape mean, first off?
Agape is a definition of a type of love. There is love of infatuation. There are many different types of love. And agape is a selfless love. It comes from a religious notion, a Christian notion. Christ represented agape love.
The highest form of love.
The highest form of love. Yeah. Exactly right.
Okay. So it was formed in 1998.
Correct.
By your mom and dad.
Yep.
How did it come to be?
That's a great question. Dad got a bonus that year and said we should do a little bit of philanthropy and contributed with local organizations here in Michigan as well as some of his alma maters. And he realized that the university was a place that was something that he worked in and cared deeply about because he cared about the mind and how the body forms and the place of the university in culture. But he also realized that it was a place where religion and Christianity was a key part, but is becoming less and less a part of that. And is there a way in which we could support, or he could support, key scholars? And if you want to use the word professors instead of scholars, that's fine too. But key scholars in area of the arts or medicine or ethics at these incredible places of learning that are part of country's culture, that are institutions that are part of our life. And that's how it came about. And he said, maybe we could dabble a little bit. I think you and I have talked, Jack, about kind of seeds for Christ and Christianity in these places of higher learning. And that's where it started in 1998. So there were two places that it started, his two alma maters. One was Harvard and one was Emory. He was a Southern boy. He was raised born and raised outside of Atlanta, Georgia, went to Emory as a journalist. In journalism, and went to Harvard Business School, and that's where it started with two professorships, one in each of those places.
So 25-plus years later.
25-plus years later.
Are you still at two universities?
We are at about 25 universities. We directly support about 30 scholars and about 55 fellows. So fellows would be younger professors on beginning their university kind of career tracks, the first one or two or three levels on that university career track. It's
You're
pretty
understating.
Amazing.
You're
I'm understating. Very much understating. I am.
What are some of these universities?
Yes. So in the U.S., there are about nine: Harvard, Yale, Duke, Emory, Columbia.
Notre Dame, Chicago.
Chicago, exactly. Yes. In Europe, especially in the UK, Oxford, Cambridge. We support some of the work of the Archbishop of Canterbury and Lambeth Palace directly. University of Aberdeen, St. Miletus. In the continent proper, there are two primary universities, University of Heidelberg and also the Angelicum, which is the University of St. Thomas Aquinas in Rome, where the Dominicans have their university. So that gives you a little sense.
China?
Yes, in the University of Hong Kong, we do support some scholars there. It's tricky to support scholars in the Pacific Rim, especially in Hong Kong and China.
We're talking to Peter McDonald. If you want to learn more, www.mcdonaldagape.org. And Peter is a world-class name dropper. Just joking. So you handpick these scholars.
Can I jump in on that, Jack? Often they're recommended to us, so we have to be careful of guidance and governance, right? Because philanthropy is a difficult thing. And often they're recommended to us. And actually, if you want to think of numbers and networks, this year about 250 unique scholars will be part of different types of conferences and colloquia that academics sponsor. So we're in Detroit. If you're building a car, you've got a team of engineers that come together and they develop and build a car, et cetera, et cetera. In the scholarly world, academics do that too, mostly driven by one or two people, but they bring a team together often to sharpen it, to make sure that the analysis or the logic or the references are correct. And so those happen often, sometimes in public settings, conferences, sometimes in private settings, colloquia. So we have a network of about 1,800 scholars over the 25 years that have been part of that. So we get requests from some of those, and we see where others have invited them and engaged them. And that's part of our delineation determination process.
One day your dad called me at 10 o'clock in the morning, "Jack, can you be free for lunch?" So I show up, and there's this man from Emory University named John Witte Jr. For the next 2 hours, wow. It was like Plato and Socrates. I've often said your dad was the smartest man I ever met. But if John Witte Jr. and Alonzo were on Jeopardy, no one would ever beat them, okay? Talk about John Witte Jr.
So John Witte is at Emory University, Emory School of Law. He is a professor in law and religion. He came from Michigan, Western Michigan, Calvinist. And he, I've got, actually, you mentioned you might ask about him or some of our areas. And we do a lot of work at the intersection of law and religion. And I'm gonna give you a little story and then a quick little excerpt from him. The story goes like this. We were talking to another scholar who's a Witte friend, and he said, we need to do something in law. And I said, we do a lot in law. And he says, here's why. He says, if you want law, you need to understand justice. And if to understand justice, you need to understand mercy. And to understand mercy, you need to understand God. And so the whole notion, justice and mercy are different terms. I mean, justice and grace are different terms. Grace is getting what you don't deserve. I won the lottery. That could be grace. Mercy is not getting what you do deserve. I got pulled over for speeding, but I don't get the ticket. And so to get justice has this interplay with law and mercy. And so I've learned that from John Witte. Here's a little quick little quote, if you don't mind me. He goes, religion gives law its spirit and it inspires its adherence to ritual, tradition, and justice. And law gives religion its structure and encourages its devotion to order, organization, and orthodoxy. Without law as its backbone, religion slowly slides into shallow spiritualism. Without religion at its heart, law gradually recedes into empty and sometimes brutal formalism.
We're talking to Peter McDonald. If you want to learn more, www.mcdonaldagape.org. In late November, we'll mark 5 years that we lost Dad. And you know, you and your family had a memorial in Naples. And John Witte gave some words of remembrance, Peter. So he had written those just for this memorial. Never going to use it again. And it was about 10 minutes. He never looked at a note, if you recall.
Of course.
He never, Stephen, looked at a note, at a speech he had just written. Unbelievable. And this show is unbelievable. And Rich Lozinski, the producer today, is unbelievable. So, and I'm Jack Krasula, not so unbelievable. And this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR.
You've been listening to your inspirational fireside chat, Anything Is Possible, for nearly 20 years.
This is Anything Is Possible, and I'm Jack Krasula.
But what has Jack been up to lately? Search at AIP Speaker Series and find out. Jack has interviewed thousands of historical voices, some of whom have offered him their philosophy of life, like Tom Izzo.
And Tom writes, "Work hard, persistence always wins out, discipline is the highest form of love. Stay humble."
The great Ernie Harwell.
"My aim is to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with God."
And the voices of our generation.
"I am reassured continuously that His unfathomable love and mercy are the greatest gifts of my life and my constant source of strength, reassurance, and guidance. His Holiness, Pope Francis."
At AIP Speakers Series is the YouTube channel where all of these jewels can be heard, including some of Anything Is Possible's greatest guests.
And we're with Mitch Albom.
The Little Liar is really a book about truth and lies and the price we pay when we lie.
This is Anything Is Possible, and with Tom Watson.
My father loved to play with the pros at the club. Developed a very quick friendship with Stan and played some golf with him. And then he would ask me to play golf with him and Stan.
Our guest this week was born with a rare disorder characterized by the absence of arms and legs. His name, Nick Vujicic.
Something that every human being actually deals with, Jack. It's the choice of continuing to believe or giving up.
And recordings of the AIP Speaker Series events at St. John's Resort. Go to YouTube and search at AIP Speaker Series. It's free. And remember,
anything is possible.
Spohom. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Peter McDonald, chairman of McDonald Agape Foundation, whose focus is to leave a small footprint for Christ in great universities with scholars who have attained the highest levels of scholarship. Okay, Peter, let's highlight a couple initiatives, current initiatives. First, the intersection of law and religion.
Sure, we talked about John Witte just a little bit. He does a lot of work on that. And we talked about how law provides questions of justice and mercy, and how in searching for justice, you need to understand mercy. And so there's an innate question of religion that comes within that. And then the structures around law, that religion gives law and law gives religion. Let me just mention one thing that often comes out. Is in our country, there's a separation of church and state. Remember, when you look at the Establishment Clause, and the often terminology is, well, that's in our Constitution. Actually, it's a Supreme Court ruling. It's not in the Constitution. And what the Establishment Clause in the Constitution is around power, that the establishment of religion should not be part of the government. And so there is a place for law and religion, and even government and religion to fit together. You have to be very, very tricky about this. But that is a work that takes place with the professors and scholars that we meet. We talked about that we support. We talked about John Witte. John Witte is also an incredible networker, and he has about 25 fellows. You can look it up online of McDonald Law and Religion Fellows at universities across the world where they tackle different questions of law and religion in the academic world, and also some in the practicing world. Some of them are clerks for justices around the world.
All right, a second current initiative, Christ and medicine.
Sure. The question of suffering is an innate question of life, and medicine deals with that or has to address that so, so carefully. There's the question of what is medicine? Is medicine to make us live longer? Is medicine, the purpose of medicine, to make us pain-free? These are really theological questions. These are religious questions. We support 9 different doctors at universities around the world, many of them on the question of palliative care. And there's a really interesting medical question. The medical question is when a doctor comes to a patient and says, do you have a religious practice? And the patient might say, well, that's a religious question, not a medical question. And the doctor will probably reply back, it's like, no, actually, it's a medical question. It's a proven medical question. Questions of hope and what our bodies are for are innately religious questions and purpose questions. And so that gives you a little glimpse. Let me just tie into ethics just a tiny bit, because we deal with medical ethics and scholars who have positions in medical ethics. What the U.S. did In scarcity of resources, an allocation of scarcity of resources is a difficult ethical question. So in COVID, who got the shots first? The U.S. did something very different than China did. The U.S. gave the shots to the elderly first. In China, they gave the shots to the elderly last, and then the elderly didn't trust the shots. Whether you agree or not, I'm not talking about any of that. I'm just talking about who gets allocation of resources. respirators and ventilators was also a similar thing. Mm-hmm. And our scholars were deeply involved in that. So these are kind of the questions that exist. We talked about Trinity form readings. There's one called The Birthmark, which is a story of a doctor who falls in love with a woman and marries a woman. But she has a birthmark. And out of love, her love for him, she wants to take the birthmark out because he doesn't like the birthmark. And the story goes on. And in the end, there are all these different operations. And his beautiful wife dies because of this. And so when is enough? These are the difficult questions that our scholars are working on questions of Christ in medicine.
All right, one more initiative. Theology and the arts.
So I'm a geeky guy, right? Two science degrees. My MBA is actually a master's of science and obviously a bachelor's of science in electrical engineering. But I have learned to appreciate the arts. The arts do a couple things. Number one is there's a language of what could be and should be in the arts that we don't really have in the engineering world. And then arts can span space and time. And so one of the visual art examples, so let me mention one other thing. Questions that come up in the arts on imagination bypass the filters of the logic and the mind. So we say something is beautiful or something is wonderful. We're not asking our mind what it is, but our embodied created soul can say that. So the arts speak directly to our soul. I've become a fan of Caravaggio. He's a Baroque painter, 1600s. Right? The Taking of Christ, you may have seen it. It's the story where Jesus Christ is arrested by the Roman soldiers. Caravaggio, who obviously didn't exist then, is in the painting holding a lantern, shining a light on this story. I want to see what is happening here. There is a span of darkness between Judas's cheek, and Judas is the one who reports, who turns Jesus in. And what Judas says is, the person I will kiss is the one you are to arrest. That is history. And so in that, you see Judas right about to kiss Jesus, but there's a dark black line in there. And you have Caravaggio shining a light. What does this moment mean for mankind? So the arts can bring all sorts of really amazing imagination to our consideration.
We're talking to Peter McDonald, www.mcdonaldagape.org. So you went from the tech world, cybersecurity, and now the last 10 years into this world of scholars, major universities, deep thinking. Peter McDonald, how has your faith changed because of this in the last 10 years?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, we're instruments is a good example or terminology. It's humbling. We have two employees, you and I mentioned off radio, you know, who the other one is. We support and coach and encourage a lot of people, but they're not our employees. We don't manage them per se. And I think that's the way God is with us. Everyone has individual agency to make their decisions, but it is humbling to be part of a large network of people, a community of people, and to draw them in into what is beautiful and wonderful. We talked about theology and the arts. I'm learning to play the piano, okay? As a very geeky person, engineering person, my son is in the room on the sofa here with us, and he can kind of laugh about it. But there's this piece I play called Angels' Voices, and the last four bars I don't like. And so I asked my piano teacher, can I just play everything but the last four bars? And she says, no, because that's when the angels leave. And I said, oh, that I understand. And so you get drawn into who is Christ? Who are we as created beings? What does it mean to be a person with a religious faith, with a Christian faith? And what is purpose and calling in that? And it is humbling. So it's drawn me closer to being an instrument of Christ.
As our time winds down, a short closing prayer, please.
Today is St. Dominic's Day, a day of... So I'm going to end with a blessing on St. Dominic. May God the Father bless us. May God the Son heal us. May the Holy Spirit enlighten us and give us eyes to see with, ears to hear with, and hands to do the work of God with, feet to walk with, and a mouth to preach the word of salvation with, and the angel of peace to watch over us and lead us by the last, by our Lord's gift to the kingdom. Amen.
Peter, thank you.
Thank you, Jack.
Please keep making Mom and Dad proud every day.
We do.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Pursuit. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. It's Paul.